Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4, packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
Hey, y'all, it's Chip Patterson from the Cover 3 Podcast, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. College football is about to enter its first ever 12-team playoff era, so join me, along with Tom Fornelli, Danny Cannell, and Bud Elliott, as we drop new episodes 5 times a week to close out the year. We've got reactions, bracket breakdowns, and best bets for these matchups with championship stakes. Follow and listen to the Cover 3 Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Now it's time for Inside the Clubhouse, a show dedicated to the Chicago baseball fan, featuring the best Chicago baseball conversation, as well as the big MLB topics, along with the biggest names, greatest guests, and listener interaction with Chicago baseball expert Bruce Levine and Ryan McGuffey on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, and always live on the free Odyssey app.
Good morning. Good to be back on Inside the Clubhouse here on 670 The Score. Ryan McGuffey with my guy Bruce Levine. It is officially the hottest of the hot stove. It's the hottest of the hot stove. It might be cold outside. Bruce has already packed his bikini for Dallas, yep. Texas, because I expect you'll be in...
My chestnuts are roasting on an open fire.
I hope you packed your banana hammock as well then, because it's going to be a long 4 days in Dallas. It's the winter meetings that start tomorrow. Bruce will have his boots on the ground. We have only two hours to discuss all of the rumors and the hottest topics in the biggest winter meetings, probably for one team, because we may see the largest contract in history, and we'll get into that with Juan Soto. We have a plethora of guests. Ken Rosenthal from The Athletic and Fox will join us at the top of the 10 o'clock hour to talk about everything going on, both in baseball, coast to coast, and here in Chicago. We make a case for Dick Allen's Hall of Fame candidacy. He could be elected tomorrow, which would be awesome here for those of us in Chicago, because he should already be in the Hall of Fame, if you ask me. So plenty to get to, including Gene Watson from the White Sox at the bottom of the hour. We got plenty of stuff here to get into, and we're going to discuss the passing of a dear friend of both of ours, Bill Melton, who we lost on Thursday. So plenty to get to, Bruce, and let's start with the winter meetings. First of all, good to be back with you, and you've written about Cody Bellinger. We're going to get into all of that, but we're going to see a boatload of rumors and stuff and how news is broken throughout the week via social media and stuff like that, who to follow, who not to follow, what to believe, what not to believe. I've teed it all up for you, Bruce. Where do you want to go, my man?
Well, let's go with the credibility of what you hear. I get questioned like every reporter on where do I get my stories. When I put a story out there, is it viable? Are you incorrect on a 1 out of 5? Are you batting 500? Are you reliable? Where are the stories come from? Is there a reliability to the information that Levine brings, Rogers brings, that people who do this for a living bring? And I think it's an important question to ask. Again, our number 312-644-6767, because this segues into a interview that our friend John Heyman, who's a contributor to The Score and one of the power reporters on the baseball scene for decades, had an interview yesterday with WFAN. And take it away.
Juan Soto, you knew that was going to come up. I saw your tweet that Juan Soto might come up, and that's the main thing. And when I look at your tweets and when I look at your history, I always say, okay, this guy's part of Boris Corp. What's the percentage of the Juan Soto contract that you're going to get when you break the news on where he signs?
No. Unfortunately, I get no money for anything. I have no financial stake.
Not even 0.01? A 0.01 would be a lot.
Nope. No stake. I don't know where you get that from. But,
so how does it work with Boris? Like I also mentioned earlier tonight, I'm like, he's not going to break the Juan Soto news. Scott Boris is West Coast based, and it's a 3-hour time difference, and it's Friday night, and, you know, 5 p.m. comes out there, and it's 8 p.m. out here, and he's probably like, hey, John, you're good. You're off the hook. Don't worry about it. We're not going to break this news tonight. You can go on, tell him about Clay Holmes.
There's a lot of competition for these stories. You never know who can get them. I mean, certainly, you know, there are writers who are represented by agents. I am not. You know, they may have advantages. There are all sorts of things at play here. We're all trying our best. You'll get some stories, won't get some others.
Now, it's been 2 years, but I remember where I was when I saw the Aaron Judge appears headed to the San Francisco Giants tweet. I love that you had a typo in it, because that made me just feel like it wasn't real in itself. And I know, obviously, we're way past that. But I've also said it would be just, like, awesome if you get to break the Juan Soto news, because that puts that so far in the rear view. It's like, forget about that. Here's the Juan Soto tweet. People are going to put that on T-shirts. I still think you're going to be the guy. How do you feel about the conversation people are having about what Aaron Judge got 2 years ago and what Juan Soto is going to be getting now? Two guys that have played right field for the New York Yankees going into free agency.
At some point, I think someone could probably drop it if they're a nice person.
What I think is it just like how I introduced you. Everybody in baseball knows who you are. So, one, it's a credit to your work, your following.
Yeah,
and how,
by the way, I won't be going out with you again. The whole thing has been a disaster.
That's okay.
I can't even believe you said that, to question my integrity.
Are you being serious right now?
I'm being serious, yeah.
John.
Asking me if I'm getting a cut, because I have a relationship with an agent. That's outrageous. I know you're not a journalist. You don't know anything about this. I know you don't, but that's an outrageous comment.
It's Friday night at 8:30, John.
You should know that much.
And I am not
done with you.
I am not taking this that serious.
Goodbye.
John, thank you for joining us.
I can't even believe it.
Thank you, John.
I can't even believe it.
Well, that's from the WFAN last night in New York. Keith McPherson, the host. You know, there's a lot there. It's all over social media this morning about, you know, John having a meltdown.
So,
but he got baited. I mean,
so the question is, are you a viable reporter if you play ball with sources? Sources for guys like myself, John, other baseball reporters, other sports reporters in all the other sports, have relationships with agents. They have relationships with general managers, with owners, with coaches, with players. That's where our information comes from, okay? It's as simple as that. People trust you. They give you information. You disseminate it, put it on your airwaves. You write it on in your columns. You write it on the internet. You talk about it on your podcasts. That's where the information comes from, relationships. John Heyman, regular contributor to Mully and Haw on this station, has many, many contacts, including Scott Boras, who is considered to be the top agent in the game as far as top players who get the most money. In this case, the Soto story is a big story, and the likelihood of John Heyman breaking that story is very strong. It's a very strong chance that he'll break that story because of his relationship with Scott Boras. Is that a bad thing?
Absolutely not. I'm pretty passionate about this. I don't understand. First of all, I don't care who breaks the story. I know it's a big thing for us in this business. Like, if you have a story, you know, I've broken smaller stories that are, you know, not as nearly as big as Juan Soto, but at least in this town. But Bruce, to your point, yes, we all have relationships in this city with management, with ownership, with players, with agents. It's part of how we get credibility ourselves to be able to get the information. How long have you been doing this, Bruce? Ballpark.
How old are you?
I'm 45 years old. All right. So you've been doing this almost 5 decades, right? 50 years?
Not quite. No.
Okay. All right. You've been doing it a long time.
Long time.
My point is, if somebody has a problem with what you're reporting or and how you're reporting it, don't follow you. Who cares?
And
like, don't follow. Know, it's stupid.
And they do, and they come and they go all the time on
social
media.
And by the way, you can be wrong, okay? Have been wrong.
Been there and done that.
And you eat the crap sandwich and you move on. And you know what? It, to me, doesn't reflect poorly about your credibility, because a guy can have a change of heart. An agent could have been baiting you, using you teams, etc. Things change. And in this social media space where everyone's trying to be first and not everyone's trying to be right, that's where John Heyman gets baited right. last night.
Look what happened to John Morosi last year.
Yeah.
John Morosi is one of the top reporters in baseball. Huge credibility, tremendous contacts and information. He gets trapped on, you know, Shohei Ohtani is in an airplane flying to Toronto.
Yeah.
And
everybody's tracking the flight.
The whole world is tracking the flight, right? The whole sports world, baseball world, tracking the flight. Flight lands, no one's there. John took a hit. He bounces back. The people at MLB that he works for believe in him still. He's still working. He's still breaking stories, doing his job. But, yeah. Again, it's you have a bad day, and, you know, you're the horse's butt.
Well, this is what happens this week. We have 5 days of this, and it's going to follow after that. Everything that doesn't happen at the winter meetings will continue to, you know, trickle out into the holidays. But there's going to be a boatload of rumors, and that's part of chasing at the winter meetings, is that you're in these hotel lobbies, and you're getting availabilities with players or with managers and GMs, but things are happening behind closed doors at 9 p.m., 10 p.m., midnight, and you're sitting there following the same rumors and stuff that other people are and fans. It's like the 630, and you guys make stuff up and put it out there for people to take. It's factual. Don't try and absolve yourselves of any accountability and responsibility. Thanks for listening. A, you can turn off the radio. B, I don't give a damn. If you think we make stuff up, then why would we be sitting in these chairs? Seriously, that's the stuff I don't understand. We are no one's making stuff up. The made up stuff comes from people who don't have the relationships, who want the relationships, who think that they're breaking news because you have 687 followers. No one cares. That's the stuff no one cares about. And in the occasional wet butt 23 or whoever, Katy Perry's booty hole that breaks a story about Jose Quintana being traded to the Cubs for Eloy and Dylan Cease, like that happened. Okay, so that happened. There was the one time where they got the cred, and they should have. But to me, whether it's Heyman, Ken Rosenthal, who's a guest at 10 o'clock, Jeff Passan, Bruce Levine, it's a hat tip, and now what?
What about Taylor McGregor, who's just texted or just sent out an X? Dansby Swanson underwent successful core injury surgery in early October with Dr. Bill Meyer. He's not expected to miss any time as a result of the surgery.
That's made up. I don't believe it.
Again, you know.
Yeah, there's breaking news right here.
Taylor has a source. Source tells her what happened. There's your story. Is it the biggest story that's going to happen this winter? No. Still good information, good stuff that's out, you know, from her. So again, you know, we're not here to apologize for what we do or converse about whether we're good at it or not. That's for you to decide. You're the listener. You're the one that decides whether or not the information's good, that we're entertaining enough and informed enough to keep your time. Again, 312-644-6767. Let's move on to some other things, and that is, how does Juan Soto impact the Chicago Cubs and the Chicago White Sox?
Okay. Yep.
Number one, Juan Soto signing, according to quote-unquote experts out there, Jeff Passan saying that by Monday there should be a signing of Juan Soto. The money is going to be between $600 and $700 million. He is going to have an AAV, which is the average salary per season, of $50 million a year. It's going to start with a five, okay? Whether it's for 12 years or 14 years, it's either going to be the Mets, Yankees, Red Sox, or Toronto that gives Soto this money. After he signs, that's when the logjam breaks. That's when the Cody Bellinger thing opens up. That's when more things are going to be talked about with Crochet and the White Sox, even though that Crochet's a different element of this. It's just going to open up the winter meetings, and we're expecting for the first time in maybe 3 or 4 years to have a winter meetings where there's an awful lot of activity.
Thank God, because I've been in, and you've been in those where it's like for 5 days you're wondering why you're there, and I'm rating my favorite cocktails of the week rather than the favorite moves because it's been a lack thereof. But I've heard the same stuff, that there's going to be a plethora, especially in the trade market And Bruce, do you think, like, it seems pretty quickly. So if Soto signs tomorrow night or Monday morning, that Cody Bellinger could be traded as soon as that same day. Is that accurate? I mean, it could happen that quickly. They don't need to, but in order for the Cubs to kind of plan the rest of their offseason, they need to move Bellinger in order to do X, Y, and Z.
I think that the teams as well as the agents, and again, you know, a lot of Boris's clients have been held up to late last year. Take, for example, Bellinger, who didn't sign until March last year, right?
Yep.
You know, again, did that impact any of his spring training, his year? We don't know. We know that some of his other clients who signed late, their years were impacted, okay? You know, two pitchers that signed late, they got off to wonky starts. Montgomery never recovered last year after signing, okay? So the idea here is that I think the agents as well as the front offices want to get their business done early this year. And that's the reason why I think that Boris's clients who have already started to sign are going to continue to sign. He's got, you know, five or seven of the top players in baseball to sign this offseason. He's not waiting until February or March to sign him this year.
No, it's cost him money. It's cost his players money, as you just said. And I think it's cost a lot of the guys who are not Scott Boras clients money as well, while everyone else is standing out in this chess match.
So, Bellinger, so I reported 2 days ago that teams that have talked to the Cubs that we know of about Bellinger are the Seattle Mariners, the New York Yankees, and the Houston Astros. At least two of those teams, and maybe three, but the Yankees and Houston are looking for a first baseman. People always look at Bellinger and go, gee, this great outfielder, can play all three positions. There's a lot of people in baseball, a lot of scouts. The eye test tells you he might be in the top three or four first basemen defensively in baseball. And that's a position where they'd like him to fill. So these conversations have taken place. There might be other teams, for instance, the Mets. If the Mets miss out on Soto, is Bellinger all of a sudden somebody that they're interested in? Another left-handed bat has missed exactly 32 games in both 2024 and 2023, had a tremendous month in August this year, had a tremendous 3 months in 2023. The best player production-wise, run production-wise in baseball from July till the end of the year in 2023, an off year last year. Slug went down almost 100 points from the year before.
Wrigley Field played small, remember? I love that excuse. I know it did, but Wrigley Field. Cody was playing with multiple injuries, too. He played through injuries. I think that's another reason to move him to first base. He's not just good defensively there. It saves his legs as he gets a little older, and he plays a position that's natural for him. What I'm more interested in, it's very clear the Cubs want to move him. What's the rest of their lineup and what's the rest of their offseason look like? Because to me, you can't just plug and play two, three, four prospects and expect that, well, everything's fixed now.
Well, our friend David Kaplan's reporting Luis Castillo with Seattle and the Cubs, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if you know that Bellinger's been a part of those conversations, maybe there is a Bellinger-Castillo matchup.
Like a one-for-one type?
Maybe, or maybe there's other players involved. You know, we're not sure. We know that Seattle has had some of the best pitching in baseball the last 2 years and was not even able to show up for the playoffs last year at all. They need offense, okay?
Castillo's been a good pitcher for the entire bulk of his career.
Is it Castillo for the guys like Triantos or Casey, or is it a matchup with Bellinger? So these are some of the things that are being talked about out there. Cub fans have contacted me and they said, why do you want to get rid of Bellinger? You want to have Bellinger and add on.
That's how I'm at. I'm asking you the same question. Why not protect Bellinger with another bat?
Ryan, do you believe in the farm system or don't you?
Bruce, do you believe that all seven guys in your top 100 are going to come up and hit?
No, but I mean, if you talk to enough scouts, they're going to tell you that Owen Casey is going to hit. He was a former number one pick of the Padres. He came over in the big deal
for Darvish?
Darvish, okay. Right? So, you know, again, because he's a Cub or a White Sox, do we automatically say, oh, they're minor leaguers for this team, our team, we can't trust it? Or do we look at somebody else's?
I look at the history of baseball.
Or do we look at the other organizations and go, yeah, we want that guy. He's their top.
Both.
Top hitter, top left-handed power hitter.
So you're going to get rid of Bellinger, and you're going to replace him with who? Like two or three of these guys?
You're not giving him away.
I'm not saying you're giving
him
away.
So you're going to get something back.
So you get Castillo. That helps solidify your rotation. Pretty good one. But your lineup takes a major hit. Okay? Hap, Bush, Paredes? There's not a pitcher that's walking in there going, I mean, who's the golden at bat rule on that guy? And that's
where do you want to be stronger, pitching or hitting?
I think the Cubs offense could use I want to win 90 games.
Four Cub starters, okay, including the guy they just brought in that they just signed this week, okay. They all averaged 92 miles per hour on their fastest pitch, okay. So we live in a velocity world. They're all really good pitchers. The problem is that when you're seeing the same type of fastball from all the rotation guys in a series, there's no change for you, okay? You get real comfortable as a hitter. When you have a guy that averages 96 to 97 in Castillo, it's that power arm that you're missing. It's that power arm that you thought 2 years ago Cade Horton would be filling in your rotation right now that is missing. So do the Cubs think they have good pitching? Yes. Do they think that their pitching, that the guys they have right now are going to be as good as they were last year? They're not sure about that. They want to fortify that starting pitching. They want other pitchers to go along with it. So when you make these signings and when you make these trades, that's their position. I agree with you. You need more pop in your lineup. How you go about that, you know, strengthening one part of your team, then making other trades, other moves, signing other free agents.
Let's take a quick call. I think Mickey agrees with me. And how are the Cubs going to get, you know, more pop and be better? Well, let's see what Mickey has to say in Park Forest. Good morning, Mickey.
Good morning, guys. I'm an old guy. I'm almost 87. Phil Cavaretta was my hero. I'm so sick of Hoyer with his mealy mouth. If things make sense and intelligent spending, you win World Series and championships with the better ball players. We always go for reclamation projects, somebody off the heap with Tommy John surgery, someone that's not doing anything. We never get the big stars. And it just seems like most of the guys, the hosts on talk radio, are apologists for the Cubs, the Bulls, and these teams. The fans want to be represented. So I'm saying this. Get some stars. You won't win a World Series without stars. I'd rather have a $100 million ball player than four average ball players. I'd just like your opinion on that. Thank
you. Amen, Mickey. Amen, brother. 87, man. You sound like you're 27. Keep on living, kid. I love it. I love it. You want some stars? You deserve some stars, man. 87 years old. Let's go, Bruce. We need stars. So guys like Mickey can stop apologizing. We're radio hosts, apologists.
Oh, you thought he was talking to me.
I said stop. I said both of us.
No, you didn't say both of us.
We are radio hosts, apologists.
You not only put it toward me, but you pointed at me.
I did point at you.
Yes.
Yes. Are you done with me? Are you going to quit calling this station now?
I'm done with you. I don't accept pointing from anybody. I've had more than my share of fist fights when I was a kid. With somebody putting a finger in your face. Isn't that the beginning of almost every fight?
Yes, it starts. Usually that finger gets to somebody's chest.
There's either a finger in your face or there's a kick coming at you.
Yeah, maybe both. Hopefully.
Anyway, he makes a great point. The Cubs have been lacking stars, okay? The White Sox certainly, outside of Crochet and Robert 2 years ago, haven't had anything that's resembled a star since they started their rebuild in the middle of 2022. Okay, so I feel for Chicago fans, when you look at all the sports teams, what have we had? We've had four or five coaches fired in 13 months here?
Every coach of every team, including the Fire and the Sky, have been fired with the exception of Billy Donovan in this town.
Right.
How about that?
So in 13 months.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So it appears the fans are not the only ones that are frustrated.
That's a great point. Yeah. That's a great point. Well, let's turn the page on this one. We're gonna hit a break, but on the other side of it, we have a lot of people don't see this side of him, but he is one of the most fun people off the field you'll ever meet. He probably doesn't remember the first time I met him. I barely do. But Gene Watson, the director of player personnel for the Chicago White Sox, will join us when we come back and continue this spirited debate that the Cubs need stars. Plus, what are the White Sox going to do with Garrett Crochet? We'll talk about that and more on Inside the Clubhouse. He's Bruce Levine. I'm Ryan McGuffey. This is 670 The Score.
We're back with more Inside the Clubhouse on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. And always live on the free Odyssey app.
Ryan McGuffey, Bruce Levine, Inside the Clubhouse here on 670 The Score. And it's time now to go to the Score Hotline, presented by Circa Resort Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book. And that's where we find the director of player personnel for the Chicago White Sox, Gene Watson. Gene, good morning. Thanks for coming on the show and giving us some of your time this morning. I'm going to ask you a question that to start this off that just for fans, I want fans to understand the excitement level that's in the front office for a team that just finished 41-121. And I'm being very sincere about this. How excited,
Brian? Good morning, guys. Nice talking to you guys.
Yeah, Gene, absolutely. Good morning. We love having you on. And I want to ask this in all sincerity: the excitement level of a team. You guys have brought in a lot of voices from outside the organization, yourself included, here in the last couple of years, bringing the type of knowledge and leadership that you guys have brought in and experience under Chris Getz. How excited about changing the culture and the narrative of the White Sox going forward are you?
Well, you know, it's such a unique situation. This was my 35th year in professional baseball, and I think my seventh organization. And you know, when I talk to White Sox fans, which is a lot, it's almost like you feel like you're giving them lip service, and it's not. I've never been more excited about a group of people. Chris did such an amazing job of being meticulous in the people he brought in, what their backgrounds were, what their experiences were in the game, you know, the things that they had been through professionally. And it's a lot of fun. I mean, we have a great group that really cares, one, about the Chicago White Sox, and two, about our fan base. And, you know, some of the things that Chris tried to embody in all of us when we got there was the trust, professionalism, and execution each day in trying to prove this organization. And it's hard to express it because the fans look at wins and losses, and I get it. It wasn't a season that we looked forward to, we expected, but I would urge the fans to be patient, because the things that are going on behind the scenes, I've seen it all in this game, and it's a lot of great things going on with the people and our processes and the things that we're doing day to day to improve this organization and put a winner on the field.
Gene, welcome to the show. Always great having you on. And when you look at what Chris has said about Garrett Crochet, that he's one of the top young pitchers in baseball, he would be outstanding for us to keep, he's somebody that we have to consider trading because of where our position is and how we're moving forward. How much, when you are sitting in the room with Chris and the other top executives, does the idea come up about, guys, we have to get this right, okay? Can a baseball man sit there and think it out himself with the group that he works with, at the same time, not second-guessing yourself, but understanding that this could be the pivotal move for the Chicago White Sox moving forward over the next 2 years?
There's no question, Bruce, and that's a great question. I mean, but I think the experience is, like, I was a part of the Zach Greinke trade in Kansas City. On the reverse side, I was a part of James Shields, Wade Davis trade when it was time to push the gas down. And I think when you look at the roster and you compare it to the playoff caliber teams and the championship caliber teams that are there right now, we're not there. And when you have a player like Garrett Crochet, who has so much attention within the industry, I think you have to listen, but you're right. You have to get it right. And I would tell you that, you know, our processes from our scouts, who we think a great deal of, to our research and development department, to our sports science department, to our relationships within the game with the 29 other organizations, our relationship with agents, all of that information is encompassing and goes into the decisions that you make. And we're certainly, you know, we're going to evaluate every scenario possible and make the very best trade that we can make if it arises. And I think that the days of just one person making a decision on the trade are over. I think it's a collaboration of the group, their experiences, the information you have, and the players coming back. What are their fits? What are their long-term fits for the organization? What's the ceiling, and how do they eventually help you win a world championship?
So I was talking to a top baseball guy that I talked to a lot about Crochet, the White Sox and Cubs, and the stories out there about Crochet and the Cubs and the White Sox. And I said to him, I said, can the White Sox worry about how the fan base looks at Cubs and Sox and worry about whether Crochet helps the Cubs win if there's a trade made, if the White Sox get back three of the top young players that they need to move forward? And this guy said, hey, it's incumbent upon the White Sox to get the best players, no matter whether it's the Cubs, Yankees, Brewers. What are your thoughts? What is the front office thoughts about, you know, possibly worrying about marketing or fans when you make a deal?
Well, I've had a lot of experience with this as well. I've been with organizations where, you know, it wasn't a popular decision to make trades within the division or within the market. I've been with organizations where the mindset was you get the very best players that you possibly can, and you don't worry about, you know, where they're coming from, you know, who represents them, what you make the best possible trade you can, because when you begin to eliminate vehicles to acquire players, now you're minimizing your player pool. And so I think that's philosophical for a lot of organizations, but for me personally, it is getting the very best player or players that you possibly can, because, you know, as the transaction moves forward and play begins on the field and you win a championship, nobody really cares where the players come from as long as you're winning a championship, and that's the ultimate prize.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. I want to ask you about the fans. You mentioned it in your first answer and how you want to serve the fans. What is the fine line for this particular fan base that had to wait through a first rebuild that didn't really see the fruits of that labor and now are being asked to do it again, knowing that it's going to take time to get this right? How do you balance as a group, as a leadership group, knowing these are the things we need to do to correctly make this thing happen, knowing that you're asking fans to take a breather for another 1, 2, 3 plus seasons? Because I know you don't, it's, nobody wants to put a hard timeline on this and say, well, 2027 is going to be, because that paints you guys in a corner. So how do you balance that fine line?
Well, Ryan, what I would say to you is and I have a strong understanding of the White Sox fans. My first major league road trip in 1991 with the Texas Rangers, we came into what was at the time the new Comiskey Park, and right away you got a strong sense and measure of how passionate White Sox fans are. And I've been very public in the last year that, you know, one of my decisions in coming over was, you know, I was in Chicago last summer and you know, there was conversations of me coming back with Chris and just the passion of the fans and how much they want to win and the desire that they have to win. But I also think the expectations drive the results, and we expect to win. We don't wake up ever expecting to lose. And I think what you're striving for right now, coming off the season that we just had, is you're striving for better baseball. You just want to strive to play better baseball. And we're very excited about Will Venable and his staff and what he's going to bring to the table. We're certainly working tirelessly every day to improve the roster. But right now, the goal would be to play better baseball one day at a time collectively and just see where it goes.
I want to ask you about Miguel Vargas. Obviously, he was the kind of the key piece in the three-team trade last year that sent Fetty to St. Louis and Michael Kopech to the Dodgers. And it just didn't click when Miguel came here. And I know I personally, look, I'm not going to sit there and tell you that I have a thousand swings of Miguel Vargas on video by any means, but it looked like he was bringing something over to Chicago in the middle of the year that maybe wasn't working in LA either. And I told people about this on podcasts all the time that, hey, when a guy's trying to find himself in a new city and trying to make a mechanical adjustment in midseason, it's impossible. It just won't work. That's not how baseball works. You got to get to the offseason. What particularly about Miguel Vargas are you excited to see after having your eyes and hands on him for a full offseason as we approach the 2025 calendar year?
Well, I'll take it back a couple of years. I mean, Miguel Vargas has been a target, you know, me personally, for a couple of years, even in Kansas City. He was a guy that we targeted as one of the better buy low bats. And what I mean by that is, like, when you have an organization that's in a championship mindset and has the star power the Dodger organization have, you kind of look, you know, under the level below and say, oh, who are some better players that we can get our hands on? And Miguel Vargas certainly identified as that. It's very difficult, Ryan. The psychology, you know, these are human beings. And, you know, the psychology of being traded, oftentimes players don't look at it like that organization wanted me. They look at it like this organization didn't want me. And he, you know, he's in L.A., the star power up and down the lineup, sold out every night Dodger Stadium. And getting traded, you know, it's very, very hard on players. They're uprooting themselves, their families. They're going to a new environment where they don't know, you know, the coaches, the managers, the players, the teammates. And so there's some psychology to that. But we certainly believe in Miguel Vargas. It's such a gap now between the major leagues and the AAA level. And I think if you look last year, even some of the better prospects in baseball that came up to the major leagues and really, really struggled and had to go back down to the minor leagues, I don't think you can disqualify Miguel from that. He's hit everywhere he's been. Going from AAA to the big leagues is an enormous adjustment for players. And we're certainly, you know, we believe in the player. We believe in the vision of the ceiling, and we're certainly working towards him reaching that ceiling for us next year.
That's the voice of Gene Watson, the director of player personnel for the Chicago White Sox, one of the top evaluators of talent in the game of baseball. And Gene, talking to general managers at the GM meetings in November, I asked probably four or five of them about their thoughts about Luis Robert. And they said, this is an intriguing player, okay? Hit 38 home runs. He's a gold glove type center fielder. He can run like the wind. We think he's a winner, but we don't know where his game's at. After two devastating injuries and one that one of them was last year, going forward, as a player on your team, how do you look at Robert as far as how does he get his timing? How does he get back to feeling like the player that he was 2 years ago?
Well, you know, certainly there's intangibles to that. You know, whenever you're the guy in a lineup and you lose the protection around you, you know, the opponent is always going to approach you differently. And losing Yoan Moncada and Eloy Jimenez certainly affected, you know, his protection in the lineup. But also, again, the psychology of two of your closest teammates and better friends not being around is also can create some situations. And so, you know, Louis, everybody knows, I mean, from the outside looking in, you know, the last few years, arguably one of the top three players in the game. There's just been a lot of things with the injuries. You know, the health around him in the lineup has certainly contributed, but we believe in the player. The ceiling is as high as any player in Major League Baseball, and we're hopeful to get him right for 2025. We believe in him, and, you know, if we can get him right, that's a huge, you know, addition to what it's been to our lineup, and so that's certainly what we're striving for right now.
Gene, we appreciate it very much. I will see you in Dallas tomorrow morning. Is it Dunkin' Donuts or is it Starbucks? Where am I going to see you?
The first coffee's on you, Bruce.
Oh, I like that. Hey, Gene, I wanted to chime in real quick with this because you and I haven't talked much, but the first time I met you, because no one has more fun off the field than you. I'm telling you that right now. We met at the Rusty Spur Saloon in Scottsdale, Arizona. You were on stage with the band, and I'm like, there's no way that's Gene Watson. And my friend was like, you're about to meet him because that dude's the goods. And we did, and it was a blast. And, dude, you have fun. That's the way I live life, and I love it, and I wanted to get that out there because you're a good time, man.
I appreciate you. Thanks so much. I appreciate you guys. Take care.
All right, Gene Watson, Director of Player Personnel for the Chicago White Sox. We got to hit a break. On the other side, we discuss our friend, Bill Melton, as we just talk about the life and the legend that he was. And Bruce and I had a personal relationship with him. When we come back on Inside the Clubhouse, he's Bruce Levine. I'm Ryan McGuffey on 670 The Score.
There's a long drive, deep right center field, way back. It drops in there. Here comes the winning run. Here comes Carlo. Here's the relay. The White Sox win. Bill Melton doubles the winning run.
I could listen to Bill Melton highlights all day. Bruce, our friend, our dear friend, Bill Melton passed away this week at the age of 79 after a brief illness in Arizona. And, you know, hit me hard. I had heard that, you know, he had been struggling a couple weeks ago. I was keeping him in my thoughts and prayers. And then you get the news and it always still hits you. And I know you have a personal relationship with Bill. And I know this one stings for everybody, all White Sox fans and baseball fans in the city.
Well, in the last year and a half, you know, we lost two guys that I did a lot of pre- and post-game radio shows with in the 90s and early 2000s, and that is Bill Melton and our dear friend Dave Wills, who both untimely deaths and passing away suddenly. And Bill was just a man's man, just a great guy to be around, talk the game. You would have a relationship with him where he would always be having fun with you. You know, off color things were kept quiet. You know, he was an old school guy, but he loved young people. He loved being around younger people. I don't know how to describe. Maybe you can do a better job of describing.
Larger than life. He's one of one. I mean, I really mean that. Like, he's the ultimate one of one. You talked about loving the younger people. That guy, he treated interns the same as he treated Chuck Garfine. He did, you know, 1,000 shows with Chuck, and I got to know Bill, and, you know, he came to my wedding. He came to parties I would have in the off season. I came to a New Year's Eve party. I shared this on Twitter this week, where he came, and he probably knew 15 people in the condo. There were probably 60 people there. Within 10 minutes, he had the entire party laughing. He didn't care. It was meet more people, shake more hands. He pulled me out of the apartment and said, "Get in the car, take me to a liquor store." And I was like, "Okay, Bill, this is my party." Get to the liquor store. He hands me $200 cash and he says, "Go buy beer for the party." And I said, "No." He goes, "Don't fight me on this." I do it. I spend every dollar of it. Get back in the car. He gets in front of my place, puts the hazards on. He said, "You know, have a great time. I'm not coming back in. I love you." Yeah. And, you know, I love him. There's so many personal stories. The baseball stories are great. I have Sox Fest stories. He came to my wedding, of course, only as he could say, he ripped me for you. You made me drive two states to get over here. You could have just done this in Chicago. You know, he's just that kind of guy, always busting, the original buster, in my opinion. Like, you could throw darts at him, and he'd throw three back at you. But he truly had a love and passion for people.
There were three or four really great stories written about Bill after he passed away. One in the Tribune, you can take a pass on reading. That was, I don't know where that was coming from. But Bill was a terrific ball player, okay? He wasn't a great third baseman. He was a good third baseman. He was a great power hitter in a time where there was no power hitting in baseball. Now, think about the late 60s and early 70s. In the late 60s, they lowered the mound in 1968 because nobody could hit. Pitchers were dominant. And the White Sox record for home runs was 29. Okay, why so few? Did they not have home run hitters? Maybe, but more importantly, Old Comiskey Park, the power alley said 375. They were actually 390, okay? Center field was 415. Down the lines was 355. It was the hardest place to hit a home run in baseball. Bill Melton set the record with 30, then 31, then 33. Dick Allen came along a year or two later, wiped out that record with 37. Eventually, Frank Thomas, and then, you know, Albert Bell, you know, they changed the dynamic of it. But to me, he never got the recognition he should have for being the outstanding player that he was as well. because his career was shortened by a back injury sustained, actually saving his own son from injury.
Yeah, there's a lot of stories about Bill Melton a lot of people don't know. And look, I could talk 2 hours about this guy. I loved the man. He was just a dear friend. You know, his story about winning the 1971 home run title is as legendary as anything. They should name Rush Street after him because of that story alone. Out till 4 a.m, getting a call in his apartment that, hey, dude, you got a game at noon. He's hitting leadoff. He was hammered. He broke his bat on the first at bat and hit homers on the second at bat. Does a legendary interview with Brent Musburger and gets on a plane at 5 o'clock. I mean, the guy is just, I think I'm a good storyteller, Bruce. And then I met Bill Melton. Yeah. And that guy is a storyteller among storytellers. He defines it. I love him dearly. Rest in peace, laddie, because we certainly loved you and the time that you shared with us. And I know Bruce can echo the same thing because we both, we lost a good one. So
condolences to Tess and his family.
Absolutely. All right. On the other side of the break, we have great reporter Ken Rosenthal from The Athletic, who's already off and running on social media with rumors and possibilities that could impact both the Cubs and the White Sox in Dallas at the winter meetings. He joins us next on Inside the Clubhouse. He's Bruce Levine. I'm Ryan McGuffey. This is 670 The Score.